Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the DJ Cut Chemist episode. I learned about Cut Chemist through groups such as Jurassic 5, as well as Ozo Motley, and I've always been a big fan of his. My favorite part about his interview was when he talked about the evolution of gear and technology and how it's changed the whole game in the DJ world. I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Weeby Show. Hi, Stan. How you doing? Okay. What are you doing here, Mickey? Get out of here. Okay, we have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome DJ Cut Chemist. George, can you help me out? Okay, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Wow, I can't believe you're
thanks
here, man.
Me.
I'm a big fan. I can't believe you're here. You're
Thank
our
you.
First male DJ.
Wow.
I'm very honored to have you here. I'm like really, I'm pretty nervous. Well, I told my girl and she screamed.
In terror.
Cut Chemist might be coming later. She goes, what? I go, yeah. Oh my God. Right, babe?
Exactly.
How could you?
Yeah. So, man, we have a lot to talk about. I mean,
yeah, I got a lot to say.
Yeah. First of all, I'm very, like, I've seen Scratch, the DVD, and it made me way more familiar with your, like, what you guys do as an art form or whatever, and that was in 2000, early 2000?
Yeah, I think 2000? That was the year 2000. Mm-hmm. It definitely opened up DJing and turntablism to a mainstream audience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I grew up in Arizona, so the only two DJs I knew about that were, like, doing what you did was Radar.
Radar. Yeah.
And then a guy named DZ, Z-Trip.
Z-Trip.
And there's a guy named Emil.
They were all part of the Bomb Shelter DJs.
That's right. They were. That's how they were on the flyers.
Yeah. So they were all in the same crew.
Yeah. So I remember them. And
I like how you say, and a guy named Z-Trip.
Oh, because he's big now.
He's definitely one of the world's top.
Did you guys know that?
Yes.
You know who Z-Trip is? But dude, we got this guy's a heavy hitter too, and he's here right now.
So I'm really good friends with Z-Trip.
Okay, so his name's Zach, right?
Zach.
Okay, so shout out to Zach. We'll get him eventually. But this is about you, right?
But I want to shout out the whole crew was amazing. I mean, Radar was one of the most innovative turntablists
back the then,
90s. And still is today. I mean, he hasn't stopped doing it. But he was one of the first guys I've seen do the loop pedal DJ routine,
which I
adopted
he
later
had a
for
foot
a routine.
Thing. I remember in the 90s because I saw him on campus. He was doing something. I invited him over to my dorm room, and I don't even know why I did. I had a joint, and he hung out for like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's his style.
Yeah, and I had the first Souls of Mischief album, and I was just playing it in the boombox, and he was like, all right, so I'm going to go see you. Yeah, but yeah, he innovated this pedal style that you were talking. Can you explain to the viewers what that is?
Yeah, basically, it's a one turntable routine where you have one turntable and mixer and a loop pedal. Mm-hmm. So basically the loop pedal substitutes the second turntable.
Wow.
And so you use looping and stacking loops to create
Dope.
Compositions live.
Dope.
And it's funny because when I saw him do it, I said, I think I know where you got that idea from. And he was like, yeah, what? Where? And I said, Victor Wooten. From Bella Fleck, the bass player who does a loop pedal bass performance.
Wow.
And when I was in Ozomatli in the late 90s, we opened up for Victor Wooten, and I saw this performance, and I was like, that would be dope to do with a turntable. And then I saw just a couple years later, Radar do it, and I was like, damn, he saw that and caught it.
Was he one of the first ones to even do that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. D-Styles from the Scratch Pickles also does it.
Wow.
But that was later.
Wow.
And then I do it, too.
Yeah, and then you do it. So let's go back. Let's go back throughout. I mean, before all that, the Jurassic 5 and the mm-hmm. Ozomatli. Where are you originally from?
Hollywood, California.
You are?
Mm-hmm.
All right, brother.
What's up?
I've been here for about, 17 years now?
Wow.
Just on, right at
right
this,
here at this
right,
spot.
Right. Well, I lived in the smaller studio.
Okay.
But and then I moved here. Yeah. So you went to Hollywood High?
No. I went to a school called LACES.
Oh, where's that at?
Los Angeles Center for Enriched Studies. It's over on Fairfax and 18th.
Wow. And then when did you get into all this DJing and all that? When did you get into music?
My parents were into music, so as long as I can remember, I was into music. But I got into DJing around in 1983, when I was 11.
Wow. Yeah. And then, do you remember some of the first records that you bought at the store?
Yeah, yeah. I used to buy records at the Music Plus on Vine.
Just
below Sunset.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then
so you remember Aaron's too on
Aaron's the first Aaron's on Melrose.
Oh, so
actually,
I didn't even know there was one on Melrose
before
okay.
I moved to Highland.
Wow.
The first records I remember buying was Rocket by Herbie Hancock.
Oh yeah.
Freakazoid by Midnight Star.
Wow, that's going back, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are
any Rush records? This guy's his favorite band's Rush.
Well, yeah, I mean Tom Sawyer was for me in my cousin who was a big kind of heavy metal head and just more of like a rock guy.
Yeah.
I remember him playing me that record when it came out and I was just like, yeah, that's a great song, you know.
They were pretty badass. That's the song I was trying to think of, that Tom Sawyer. That guy's voice is so distinct. Yeah. What's the lead singer's name?
Because I was a drummer and I know
Neil Peart, yeah. Who's.
Getty Lee.
Okay.
We were good. You were so close to losing the camera work job there.
You're fired.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. But anyway, let's go back to you. So you're from Hollywood and then you were just shopping for records. And then what about your first turntable and everything?
First turntable I bought at probably the Federated Group.
What's that?
It was like what Circuit City used to be. It was like an electronics store.
Explain to people what they don't even know what Circuit City is.
So
these kids are like 20 years old. They don't know.
What about Radio Shack? Anybody out there?
Where are
my Radio Shack heads at?
Explain those two businesses.
Federated Group? Nobody? Circuit City? There's one? All right. So basically a place where you go to get anything electronic oriented. So
cables too, right? RCAs?
Cables. Mm-hmm. Turntables, tape decks, TVs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was an S-arm Technique. It wasn't a 1200, which is the standard that DJs use. But I pretty quickly got a 1200 after that. And so that was about 84.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I got mixer, this wood paneled, custom built Newmark mixer. It was an 1100 and this guy put on a wood frame.
Wow.
Looked like the family truckster from
Dinosaur
Vacation
mixer, huh?
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have it. I still have my original setup.
That's great. Because that's probably worth money now because it's vintage, real vintage gear.
All right. Well, anybody out there that can tell me the address to the Federated Group in LA, I'll ship my turntables to you.
Really? So you could sell it. Do you want to sell it on the show
here?
Okay. Because people might reach out to you and they'll be like, I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'll give you $5 for the whole set.
$5,000.
Mm.
So 5,000, then you.
That's probably what it cost back then.
Yeah. So 500,000, and you can have it. Just contact him and tell him the address. let's. And then, when did you start? So were you collecting rap records, rock records, jazz records, or did you just buy everything?
Well, I was already collecting records before I became a DJ. I was collecting KTEL records, like KTEL compilation records, which compiled all the radio hits. So in like 1980, it would have been Double Dutch Bus, mm-hmm. He's So Shy by the Pointer Sisters, mm-hmm. You know.
Rod Stewart?
I didn't see any Rod Stewart.
Phil Collins?
No.
Okay.
So I would buy those comps because I wanted to have all the records they played on the radio.
Yeah. Earth, Wind, and Fire, that was
I think
70s.
They might have had one on a comp.
Okay.
Daz Band, you know. So I was doing that, and then I was also buying James Bond soundtracks for some reason or another.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The soundtracks to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about like sci-fi movies, Star Trek, Star Wars?
Yeah, of course. I mean, all it all started with Star Wars.
Yeah, hell yeah.
The soundtrack. That was the first record I was ever given.
Gatefold,
Star Wars, all black with the booklet.
Dude, this guy knows his stuff. He's like encyclopedia. We're going to get to that. So, wait, how vast is your collection now? We're going to go back, but I'm just curious, just my own curiosity. Mm. Will it fill this whole room?
Oh, yeah, you'd probably need a couple of these. So,
you believe this?
That's crazy.
This guy has that many records. How many? I mean,
I don't know, 40,000 maybe.
George, how many records? I've been to your house. How many records do you have? About two crates?
Yeah, a couple hundred. That's a lot less.
Well, you got enough to fill a fireplace. That's pretty good. Are you going to burn them?
I have no idea. They're just there. Yeah. So how long did it take you to get 40,000?
Let's see. I started collecting in 1980, and now it's whatever year it is. Is it 2018?
Mm-hmm.
So you do the math. That's how long.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I'll acquire collections and sell some and keep, you know. And so
would you call it an addiction? Is it like the way people, like how some people collect baseball cards? And they're like, I need this one. I need this one.
Yeah, I would say so. And a lot of people that used to collect comics and baseball cards moved on to records.
Wow. Yeah. So it's like a collectible thing, and you need certain things.
Yeah, you want to complete like a collection, or
yeah. Okay, so let's go back. Let's go back. When did you start like wanting to make your own music, or like getting other types of gear,
right?
Like a drum machine or a four track and all that stuff.
Well, it was in '87, and the rap music was changing from drum machines into sample based.
Mm-hmm.
So they were using other records to make their records, and that it was at that time that I was thinking I could do that because I have records,
right?
And so I did.
Name three albums that really inspired you back then. Were you like, oh my god,
Jungle Brothers, Straight Out the Jungle,
dude? That's my shit right there. I love that shit.
It's real, you know. That's the main one.
Yeah.
All of 45 King stuff.
Yeah.
De La Soul.
Shout out to Prince Paul.
Oh yeah, that's my.
We want to get him on here one day.
Paul,
holler at me, Paul. I love you. I met him at Scion. I met him at Comic Con.
Yeah,
he's a good guy. I really look up to him.
He's great, and I definitely he was a big inspiration in my style.
Yeah, so he's dope.
Of what to sample, and you know how to make it fun.
Yeah, that's when I think of Jurassic 5, I get that same vibe. When I first got that record, I'm like, this reminds me of like fun, and
that's
like
what
De La
Soul's
dead.
Yeah.
And
we listened to, I remember sitting with Newmark and just listening to the De La record going, you know, they were definitely onto something. We should, you know, try to hone in on something that isn't so brooding and, you know, like roughneck. We should try to open it up
with fun, like
and just like I wanted something like colorful.
Mm.
Yeah,
the production. I love the music on all those J5.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminds me of that. It's reminiscent to that.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, would you say that? Okay. So, like De La Soul. What about any of the harder stuff, like Master Ace or?
I'm a huge fan of the Juice Crew, so he was a part of, but. So it'd be Master Ace
yeah.
before he was Master Ace
right.
like 88, 89.
And
I loved Master Ace.
Slaughterhouse. Yeah, that's a great
record.
And
then he signed with Delicious later
Delicious
in the
vinyl.
90s and mm-hmm. did, like you said, Slaughterhouse. And,
yeah, I love that album.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, continuing on with my biggest inspirations, it would be Main Source.
Shout out to Lars Professor.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Another big inspiration for me.
I my band Monchi, we did a show in New York, and he was, we had a sound check before them. It was their anniversary for Breaking Atoms. Mm-hmm. No one in my group knew Main Source or
really?
And he was right there, and I had to pay say what's up, man, and you know what I mean, I just showed him respect because I'm like, I'm a fan of his music. So
one of my proudest moments is when somebody played him the first J5 record I did.
Oh wow.
And he was just like, that's funky, and I was like, seal of approval right there. I'm done.
So this is fun for me. What would you say your top 5 producers from the East Coast are, like, just off the top of your head, with that type of boom bap hip hop type stuff?
Prince Paul,
Large Professor.
I have to say the Bomb Squad
for sure.
God, there's so many. I think Q-Tip.
Man, I love that one. Yeah,
and the Beatnuts.
Intoxicated Demons.
Yeah,
love that album.
Those were my faves.
You missed Premier, though.
I mean, Premier, you have to, he doesn't...
Okay.
He's just the one.
Yeah, he's the one. Yeah, yeah.
I can't lump him in a group.
I like how you threw Q-Tip in there.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people will give him much props for his production,
One
man.
Love by Nas was a game changer for me.
Q-Tip, man.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all the Tribe stuff he did. And a lot of people, well, you know, JD isn't from the East Coast.
Yeah,
and
but
US specifically,
Detroit, right?
But you know, JD's up there. But, I mean, yeah, when it comes to Premier, I can't even put him in a group.
Yeah.
He's just the only one mentioned. He's the king kings.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what made, I'm so happy that we're talking about it, because, like, it's a rare thing to have you, a person like you here, because I could just pick your brain. What do you think it was about that sound, like that was so special back then from the golden era? Like, what do you think, was it a combination?
The fact that people weren't scared of the sample laws, probably.
Okay, that's it, yeah.
For one?
Yeah, you can't do that no more, huh?
Well, I mean, you can, you just got to be really good about clearing stuff and...
Yeah,
and or chopping it, you know, to the point where it's
undetectable.
Yeah.
Oh. So when do people start coming after you as far as the copyright laws? Like, if your song blows up?
I don't know. Nowadays they'll just come after you. I got pinched for a sample on my new album, actually, like the week it came out.
You did?
Yeah, and it was cool. We worked it out, and I the funny thing is I tried to find him to clear it, and apparently I was talking to the wrong group member, so it didn't ever. Get cleared, and then the other guy hits me up on a DM with
on your Instagram,
with a YouTube of the song that I sampled, a YouTube clip of it, and he just question marks, and I was like,
oh wow,
and I was like, cool, you found me, let's work it out, and we did, and it was cool.
Okay, that's cool.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you got to be careful. I mean, if you're not going to clear something, you have to be ready for that knock on the door,
right? And then So you have to pay for that, the clearance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, cut them in on the writer's credit and stuff.
Oh, okay, wow, that's it's just interesting.
Yeah, which is totally fair.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go back to so you started then, Lance. We're gonna go back to your beginnings. You started. Did you get? You start just accumulating this gear yourself, like. Like you'd go to Guitar Center.
Well, my dad was a music writer, and so I inherited his 4-track reel to reel.
You had a reel to reel.
Yeah. So for all the kids out there,
explain to the kids what a reel to reel, because they're like,
it was reel to reel was a recording device, a tape recording device that you would use where the tape was on a reel and it would go along the record and play heads.
Wow.
And then you'd have only four tracks.
Yeah.
So all the original, all the first demos were made on that thing. I had a sampler that I got from a friend of mine who later became Exhibit's producer.
Oh,
interestingly.
Wow.
And we went to Los Angeles Laces together, my middle school, high school.
Yeah.
And he was buying samplers and stuff, and I would come over and make sample tapes, like little loop tapes.
Oh, yeah.
And so eventually he just sold me the sampler, and so I had the sampler and the four track, and that was how I made music.
That's it.
Yeah. Until I got, you know, an MPC 60 drum machine and, you know, upgraded.
So how much further down the line when you start upgrading it to those more powerful sampler machines?
Well, the MPC 62 I held on to for a while. And then the 1000, the MPC 1000. And then after that, I went Pro Tools and I got rid of the reel-to-reel and everything.
So what do you do all Pro Tools now?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I do some Ableton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that's so crazy. Like, cause like what people, these kids don't know, like what it really took for you guys to really create
the limitations. I mean, a lot of things, are created through limitations. You know, you have to get around, you know, obstacles to create something.
Right.
When you only have four tracks or you only have eight tracks or you only have 4 second sampling time, which is what I had.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to speed up the sample to even get,
So you do, there's all kinds of things that you had to do in order to make it happen.
So you have to come up with your own techniques.
Yeah.
To,
yeah. Wow. And then when, you know, something like Pro Tools comes in and you have 64 tracks and, you know, endless sampling time, you're just kind of like, what do I do with that?
It's too much, huh?
It's too much, yeah.
So would you say limitations are good, like, because you're forced to get creative? Because you only
absolutely.
Have, you only have 4 seconds or whatever, because, realistically, you only have a couple seconds to get the break loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get the break loop, that's like a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have 3 more seconds to find like a horn or an upright, like whatever.
Well, what you do is you would loop the, like maybe a 1-bar drum loop on the sampler, put it on track one, get the musical loop,
stack it on track two,
mm-hmm. you know, and then you would just clear the sample, just turn off the machine, turn it back on, lose it forever.
Oh, geez.
But it's on the reel.
It's on the tape. Yeah, it's on there.
You tracked it. And then the MC would be on track three.
And then the ad-libs.
And then the ad-libs on track four.
That's exactly right. Wow.
So, and I mean, think about, you know, some of our favorite rap music was made with an SP-1200, which is the predecessor to the MPC 60. It's a drum sampling drum machine that a lot of people were using in, I don't know, from like 87 to whatever, the early 90s.
Yeah.
And that had only,
how many seconds
I think, 12 seconds sampling time, maybe, or something like
that. Not too much more.
No. So, yeah. I mean, listen to songs like Flavor in Your Ear by Craig Mack. I mean, Easy Mo B. I mean, he should probably be on the list of one of the best producers. That beat was so amazing, you know.
He did it with that machine.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about the SP-12 that produces that?
Pete Rock, SP-1200 and a Akai S950 should also be on the list.
I mean, Pete Rock, you can't
just do five. I mean, damn.
Yeah. Okay, how about this? 10. Well, you could add five more.
All right, yeah. It's everybody on Nas's first album. How about that? You know, because who gets that only the best MC in the world gets Pete Rock, Large Professor,
Q-tip.
Premier, Q-Tip, all on the same record. You got to be kidding me.
I want to do another top 10 later because I just want to pick your brain. But let's go. This is interesting to me because, you know, because I've always been interested in this type of thing. Oh, good question, George.
That is a good question.
Good job, George.
No, the only restrictions I place on myself is probably like what kind of things I would sample, you know. But that just comes from like the snob factor.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I can't use that because it's been used too much or something like that. But
yeah.
And I'm starting to let go of all that too.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because I hear people flip things that have been sampled a million times and they flip it in new ways and it's dope. So I'm like, I can do that too. Why can't I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then when did you start sampling off records and stuff?
In 87.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's when you had your MPC 60?
No, that's when I had the Roland S10 keyboard sampler.
Oh, you had a keyboard sampler?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So when did you get that thing?
That was the one I got off the guy in middle school. So I got it in 87. So I was, 14?
You're 14, and you're doing it when you're 14 years old?
Uh-huh.
Wow, do you believe this? This guy was making music 14 years
old.
It's
all a lie.
And then when did you start getting more serious where, like, you're, like, making demos or you start meeting the people from Jurassic 5? Or?
Yeah, well, I met Charlie Tuna and Mark 7 in 87, and we pretty much started getting together at my mom's house in Hollywood and creating, not really demos at first, but just, like, I'll DJ and they rap.
Yeah.
And then that turned into, all right, let's break out the sampler. I'll loop this break up. You rap. Let's record it, you know, on the reel to reel. And and we started peddling demos around probably around 88.
Jeez. 88.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing in 1988?
Pushing a skateboard around. And
I was in middle school. I think I was in middle school. Middle school, yeah. But you're already doing it in 88.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
how did you meet Charlie Tuna? Just on this Melrose
he,
or something?
No, Melrose. Does he look like a Melrose
no,
kind of
no,
guy?
No, I just thought it just popped in my head. Maybe like
Charlie Tuna on Melrose. I met him at the Silver Lake Recreation Center. It was up by the reservoir.
Oh, cool.
And he had gone to Marshall High with Mark 7 and another friend of ours that was also in our group Unity Committee, which was half of Jurassic 5. And so I met him and he was from head to toe in leather, the same outfit that Eddie Murphy was wearing in The Golden Child with the hat.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
he dressed like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he's from Chicago. So okay. he didn't have an LA swagger at all.
Yeah, that's definitely not
and
LA.
Back then I was like, you know, I embraced East Coast hip hop so much. And when I saw him, I was like, this dude definitely looks like he's from somewhere else. And a friend of mine said, if you play this James Brown record, he used to roller skate to it in Chicago and he'll really dig that. So if you want to get his attention.
Yeah.
And so I did. And sure enough, he did. Wow. And he's like, yo, I used to roller skate to that Chicago. And so I was like, well, I got more records like this. I was like, you rap? And he's like, yeah. I was like, all right, well, come by the crib.
Wow. You know, it happened
we'll
like that.
Loot
huh?
some of these up and we'll make a tape.
Wow.
And that was it.
So what about there's other members in J5? Like, how'd you meet all these other guys?
There was a place that we started going to in 91 called The Good Life.
We've had Tumex on here, and then a lot of those other people. No Can was on here too, but he's a little like.
Yeah, I think he might
different
be more
generation.
Project Blowed, maybe.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, but they mentioned it.
But
well, explain to the viewers what that is again.
Yeah, The Good Life was a health food cafe in South Central on Crenshaw and Exposition.
Sorry.
And a community activist by the name of B Hall and her son. Arcane Blaze decided to do a rap night at this health food cafe. There's a wonderful documentary about it. It's actually Ava DuVernay's first film.
Oh.
And it's called This Is the Life. And she was one of the MCs there in a group called
Where
Figures of Speech.
Where can the viewers watch this documentary?
You can get it probably just on Amazon or something.
It's on Amazon. Is it on YouTube?
I believe it is.
Oh,
it probably
cool.
is on YouTube, yeah.
So that's good. So these viewers could
This is the life, and it's a really good depiction. When I saw it, it was like going back to that time, which is my favorite time in my entire life.
Why is that? Just the energy and everything?
You know, it was the first time that I really saw something different in rap that had evolved from something that I thought I was an expert in.
Yeah.
You know, like I was such a scholar of East Coast hip hop and collecting.
These guys
and,
had different styles.
But then
there,
when
right?
I went in and I saw Freestyle Fellowship and Mike and Nine, I was like, I've never heard anything like this before in my life. I can't even wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
And there's very few times in one's life where you could say that, you know,
right,
where you're like,
right.
damn, this is, I've never experienced anything like this at all. And so The Good Life was that kind of place. It was all about styles. Yeah. You know?
Oh, we had Subtitle on here too.
Oh, okay.
So Gino he talked a bit about that because him and, I guess Thavius they had a group together later on, but Gino was talking about it, as far as, on an earlier episode,
right.
but, yeah, I mean, I wasn't around, but I'm a big fan of all that stuff, like with AC Alone and Mike and Nine and Self Jupiter and all those dudes. Yeah.
And so there was a group there called Rebels of Rhythm.
Okay.
and it was.
I haven't heard of that one. I haven't heard of that group.
Okay, so
yeah.
they were unique at the Good Life because they were very East Coast sounding.
Oh, cool!
In a very traditional sense, and me being such a fan of that type of hip hop, they immediately resonated with me, and so I walked up to them. I said, "Hey, I would love to do some music for you guys."
Yeah.
I think I have some music that would actually complement your style really well. Mm-hmm. And then I asked them if they could feature my group Unity Committee on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that became the first Jurassic 5 record.
Wow.
Yeah, it was 94. Sold it out of the trunk of my Honda.
It's crazy. You pressed it up yourself?
Mm-hmm. Did 500 copies. Peddling demos wasn't doing shit. No one cared. And, you know, it's one of those situations where it wasn't until we could do it ourselves that people got interested.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
like, well, they don't need us, so of course we're interested, you know? But when you go, we need you, they're like, we don't want you, you know?
Wow, that's one so of those crazy.
Things. Yeah, it was weird.
So when did the name come up? Like,
Jurassic 5 was formed a little bit after that 12-inch came out. It was just Unity Committee and Rebels of Rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
I think 95, because it got that single got picked up by an East Coast label called Blunt. And we
Blunt
Records, yeah. Mike
didn't
Geronimo.
They have a clothing company called Blunt too in the '90s? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of wrong. Okay,
this would be like Mike Geronimo was like the big seller on that Royal.
Yeah,
somebody.
Okay, cool.
Anyway, Rebels of Rhythm Unity Committee. Yeah, it became Jurassic 5 in 95. So
when
it got picked up in Blunt,
yeah.
we knew we had to make a group name. It couldn't just be like two groups.
Who came up with the name?
Charlie Tuna's girlfriend at the time. She said, "You guys sound like the Fantastic Five. You're more like the Jurassic Five."
Oh, so it was like a joke.
It was a joke.
Oh, I thought it was like you guys were into dinosaurs or...
Well, then you start to apply, you know, then you start to apply theories to the
name.
Yeah,
theory.
You know,
yeah,
and you
go,
yeah, we're going back like, you know, the Jurassic period. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
It's like you kind of morph into the name after it's made. It's like, you know, that's what Cut Chemist was. It was made by my friend's dad, and I kind of adapted into like the whole experimenting, putting
so cool.
things together,
yeah.
creating new elements, you know.
Yeah.
So Jurassic 5 was
that's so interesting, man. Wow.
Not that
so
different.
Okay, like setting aside the group thing, when did you start taking DJing seriously, like the turntablism thing?
Mid 80s.
Okay, so you were always throughout the whole thing you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm trying to find this videotape of me scratching in 86.
Oh,
and
please
I'm,
find it.
And
yeah.
I'm cutting it up.
Oh, you are? You are?
I'm cutting it up. Yeah. Yeah. I hope I can find it. I don't know. Yeah. It might be gone forever. God, I hope not.
So how many hours?
That would get so many Instagram likes.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, forget it.
Yeah.
You know, just for the likes alone, I got to find it.
You have to.
Yeah.
How many hours would you practice in your room to get that good?
Back then, it seemed like I would do like, well, you know, I had to make time for school.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably like 4 or 5 hours.
4 or 5 hours a day in his room, man.
Yeah.
So explain, because a lot of these viewers are younger, right?
Mm.
So explain to them, because a lot of them may have a different, like, you know, conception of what DJing is. Like, what makes a person a DJ? Because there's so many different definitions,
then,
but like, what's
back
your...
Back then, just remember, the only medium you could play were records.
Okay.
So that thinned out the herd a lot because you had to carry crates of records to the gig.
Physically.
So who's going to want to do that?
No one.
Nobody. Okay. Who's going to want to go out and buy records, you know, all the time?
No one.
Very, very little.
Yeah.
So that right there, because it was restricted to people that played records, there were far less DJs. As soon as it opened up to laptop technology, then it was like, everybody's got a laptop. Now all I got to do is
Serato.
Get the app, easy.
Yeah, yeah,
all I got to do is download the songs, easy. And then you got, you know, the floodgates open for anybody to become a DJ, which is both good and bad.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it opens up to people that might not have been DJs but should have.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also opens it up to people that definitely should not be DJs. And
you don't have to say any names, but
no, yeah, I'm not. Okay, but yeah. But it, you know, there was that time, and it probably still is. I think it's calmed down a little bit. Where you walk in, I don't care who it is, anybody you meet off the street, you walk into their apartment, and there's two turntables and a mixer, like on the kitchen counter or somewhere, right, and you're just like, really? Like, you DJ? You know, it's probably not, but
you're right.
They have two turntables and a mixer, you know.
But what about the skills involved that comes with being a DJ? Like, because when I first saw Z-Trip in Arizona in the 90s, I couldn't, he was taking one song and then blending it with a rock song, and I couldn't tell the difference when it was like meshing together, and I'm like, this is amazing.
Well, yeah, he's
like, I don't know if you guys seen like a real DJ set, but it like blew my mind when I saw that.
Yeah, there's so many different things that go into it. You know, it's scratching is just, you know, one of them. But blending, knowing what blends together, having an ear.
Tell them what blending is, the viewers.
Blending is mixing two records together at the same time, so they're basically overlapping.
So and you would have same BPMs?
Yeah, the same BPMs and
beat per minute.
And hopefully the same key, like the tonality and the whatever, they're in the same key register, musically.
Right. So
speaking, otherwise, you get dissonance, and you know, it's just bad news.
So explain even the more technical element as far as the fader on one side, and then when you're listening to the other record.
I can refer to you to a Grandmaster Flash YouTube video.
Oh, okay.
but no, he does it. He explains it really well from like 82 or something. But basically, you know, you have one turntable, a mixer, and another turntable, and the fader controls, you know, goes from this side
to this side,
and in the middle you can hear both. So when you have the fader in the middle and you're blending records.
Yeah, but dude, like when they were doing that live, when I saw Z-Trip doing that live, he was like in the moment, and then he had to do it live. Like,
well,
he's
one of the world's best. You know, they call him the king of the mashup.
Right.
You know, so which is basically a blend.
He could do that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the mashup is more like an ironic blend, I think. That's how it kind of started. Like,
what makes it ironic?
Well, like, you would put something, two things that
shouldn't be together,
you wouldn't think would go together,
but they do.
And they do.
That's what he was doing.
And that's what he does. Yeah.
Man, it impressed me. It was really impressive. Yeah. And I was like, wow, I don't even know how he's doing that.
One of my favorites, and this was created by the director, Jason Reitman, who dabbles in DJing. He came over and we did a mix together, and it's all Tom Sawyer mashups. And my favorite was, Since You've Been Gone by, is it Kelly Clarkson? The acapella over Tom Sawyer fucking sounded so dope.
Oh, you guys did that?
Yeah, it sounds so dope.
Wow.
It's on my SoundCloud. Go to it. I think it's called the Middle Finger is what we called our group.
What's your SoundCloud? Just to put it out there.
SoundCloud.com/cutchemist.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So definitely listen to that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff up there, but that's definitely on there. And I was listening to it the other day because I hadn't, and I was like, that's actually pretty cool.
That's cool. How long have you had your SoundCloud out there?
Since almost 10 years, I think.
Damn.
Like maybe 8 years.
Yeah, wow. So let's go back to the whole, the technicality of what you do. So like, how has technology changed all of this stuff? I mean, that's just one aspect, the blending, but what about scratching and all that stuff? And digging.
Scratching pretty much remains the same, although there's a new device, I guess, Jazzy Jeff created where the scratches are already baked into the mixer or something like that, or in the app. So you can just hit a button. And there was a lot of controversy about it. But
that kind of defeats the purpose, though, doesn't it? Like a painter?
But wait until somebody flips it. You never know. Somebody might flip it. You never know, and it'll be one guy, and he'll do something that no one thought of, and it'll be like, oh wow, and it validates.
Yeah.
But you know, for people that don't scratch but they want to incorporate it in their mixes, it could become useful. So, you know, I can dig it.
Right.
You know, I'm not opposed to anything being invented.
Right.
And if it ushers in more people that shouldn't do it, you're still going to get people
it's
in there
inevitable.
That should.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And
they're 15-year-old world champion DJs now. There's this last year was a 15-year, I think, or was it 12? No, A-Track was 15. Okay. A-Track was 15 when he won the world championship. I think this guy might have been 12.
Okay.
So, I mean, technology's doing something right if a 12-year-old's going to come up there and kick some ass.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are your feelings towards all this? So, I mean, because you were there
that
since...
a 12-year-old can kick my ass in DJ?
I guess
that make me mad or sad? A little of both.
Yeah, yeah. So what makes them a world champ if, like, what make a 12-year-old a world champ if they have the better app or something?
No. Oh. He was beat juggling the shit out of, what was it, Funky Cole Medina or something.
Oh.
No, he's like, yeah, I mean, the DMC is a...
This DMC. Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought it was just like America's Got Talent or something.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
I thought it was like some thing. Like,
no,
where
this
he was
is
just, the
same
the
okay, so contest that have been going on since 84 or 85.
So explain to the viewers what DMC...
Is it Dance Music Competition? Basically... all the dance music DJs would get together and find out who the best was. And it started out as just normal club DJs. Mm. And then I believe it was, who was the first one? Oh God, I'm terrible. Who was the first one that introduced scratching? Was it DJ Cheese?
Yeah, I mean,
that's where the YouTube comments are going to be like, what a dumbass. It's this guy. It was 85, I believe, and he introduced scratching.
Right.
And so a lot of people at the DMCs were like, what is this? This don't do that. That's horrible. That's not real DJing. Mm. And then the next year, you get people like, you know, a new music seminar with Jazzy Jeff, and then you get Cash Money, and then you Joe Cooley, and then everybody is scratching, and the dance music people just phased out because that became the thing.
Oh.
And what kind of tricks can you do?
So, I didn't even know that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So it was a dance thing at first?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was did for like DJing already, like
I mean, you know, it was basically like people playing Madonna records and blending it with like other cool records.
That's
and
so
going
cool.
You know,
I love it. Yeah.
And then it turned into and then, you know, you have Steve D introducing beat juggling, you know. And then there are other competitions. There was the New Music Seminar. There was the Superman battles. So within these three different DJ contests each year, it just evolved because videotapes were flying around. People were practicing,
trying to get
new skills and routines ready for the next year to be better than what just happened.
Yeah.
And it evolved very quickly. Steve D, definitely a pioneer of the beat juggle.
What is beat juggling for?
Beat juggling is when you take two records and you manipulate the beat. You do repeats, slow it down, speed it up.
Mm-hmm,
you know, turn a straight four into a swing, into a triplet. You know, anything really. It's how you manipulate the beat and change its.
How are they doing that
movement.
with the fader? They're with the,
yeah,
slowing
by
down the record?
Stopping each record and, you know, going back and forth.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, beat juggling is one of those things when it came into fashion, I was like,
Yeah,
and I'm still kind of like that. Like, I was, you know, I'm a scratcher.
Yeah.
But when it comes to beat juggling, I'm kind of all thumbs. You know, I can do it a little bit, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I look at these routines from like 87 of these people I mentioned, and it's amazing to me even now. And then you have the X-Men who... became the Executioners.
That's the East Coast guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That really evolved that style. You have Shortcut from the Invisible Scratch
Pickles.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and then the Beat Junkies out here
and then
too.
The Beat Junkies,
yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely want Redmatic on here too.
Oh, you should.
Yeah.
You should have him talk about his DJ school.
Plug,
Beat Junkies Institute.
Oh, they have a school.
So you can go there and take classes and
in LA?
Learn how to do all this stuff.
The stuff you're talking about for the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
They could just learn it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, I've taken classes there.
You have?
Yeah.
You should be teaching the classes.
I know.
Yeah.
Right now I'm a student.
Okay. Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
That's really humbling. Like, this guy's, you believe he's still saying he's a student?
Yeah, always a student.
Wow. So with all this technology, so it's like it's makes a good DJ even better then, wouldn't you say? Because they don't have to log all the records and they have the Yeah, the stuff to count the BPMs is already everything's already in sync and everything.
The technology,
yeah,
it can. I mean, it can make you lazy. You know, in what ways? Well, if there's a BPM, you know, counter and it, you know, it blends the records for you, then you don't have to do anything really. You just
that's the technology could do that.
Hit a sync button, yeah.
Oh, it's kind of like cheating.
Well, yeah.
I guess it's. So nowadays, are there some DJs that just don't have it? They just bring out like maybe an iPod and then just put the.
Most DJs. What are you talking about? Yeah. Do that now.
What do you think about
people
this,
make
man?
Because
like he's breaking down the history. Like now they're just bringing their phone. You can bring your phone.
I brought my phone. I'm going to do a DJ set right now.
And you can just plug in quarter inch
yeah.
or whatever headphone jack.
Or you probably Bluetooth it.
Oh, you just Bluetooth it onto their monitors.
Yeah.
That's how DJs do it now?
That's how this is how we do it.
What do you guys think about this? It came from all this stuff.
Okay, so you ask this like you're amazed. What, DJs stand around and do nothing? Oh, yeah, actually. I mean, some, not, you know, the crews I roll with. No. It's the ones that we make fun of.
Stand
there and do nothing. They take their shirt off and they jump around and do, you know, they do anything but manipulate the music.
God, I don't think I think that's like just, don't you, I mean, don't you think that's kind of not cool for them to be doing
well,
that?
Well, those are some of the world's most, like, the richest biggest. DJs that do that.
So you're telling me now, because back then, let's
skills
go back.
Skills don't pay the bills, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because back then it's like you had to have the skills.
Right.
And you had to have practiced for hours.
Yeah.
But you're telling me now, in today's world, the DJ world, you don't need any of that.
Well, you know, if a lot of the people that don't do much, the music selection that they're playing speaks for them. So, you know, they're not trying to be turntableless.
Oh.
And that's cool, you know, but, you know, a lot of them are artists and they put out their own music and they play it.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, what people are going to see.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't, you know, their audiences aren't going to see them
do something
aren't
technical.
Going just to see them do something technical. No. So, I mean, you know, it makes sense. It's fine.
But what would you do? Okay, like, if you're one of those DJs with the iPod, right? Would you have to just be jumping around the whole time and, like, acting like hey.
Yeah, like, my shit's the shit.
Yeah, right.
And everybody in the audience is like, yeah, it is the shit.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Babe, do you want to ask Cut Chemist something?
Who are the DJs right now that you're, like, about?
Yeah, let's turn it more positive, Positive, yeah.
The DJs that I look up to the most.
Coming up, like some younger kids coming up there. You're like, you know what? I like that kid. You know, he does it like the way we used to do it with this modern day technology, and he's still doing it right. You know. Oh, that's not good. He's thinking too much. This is not good, man. Oh, this is bad.
No. I can think of a bunch. I just forgot their names.
That's not good. George, what do you think? He couldn't answer that.
Can I just say my favorites? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Can I default to that?
Yeah.
Well, some of my favorite DJs throughout history.
Okay.
Grandmaster Flash.
Okay. Do 10. Oh, do 5.
I'll 7.
Do 7. Grandmaster Flash.
Grandmaster Flash.
This is fun.
In no particular order. Like, I'm not going to do it
sequentially,
or chronologically
pops.
Or whatever.
Gotcha.
DJ Shadow.
Hell yeah.
Q-Bert.
Mm-hmm.
Kid Koala.
What's up, Eric?
Mm-hmm.
We love you.
Shortcut.
Yeah.
Jazzy Jeff.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
And I got to say, man, I got to say Cash Money.
Cash Money Records. Yeah. Okay. Can we do top 7 worst? No, I'm just kidding. I want to do a positive. No, that's good. How about
cut
top
chemist.
Seven? No, no, you're, dude. I'm sure you're top five, top whatever.
In whose list?
A lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people. But speaking of Shadow, didn't you guys have done some work together? Haven't
you? Yeah, we've done tons. We've been.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Yeah, like some of the stuff.
It started with me doing a remix for his song Number Song in 97.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a mix of all 45s called Brain Freeze.
You did that live for a live show, didn't you? Back in the day? Like it was like.
It was at the El Rey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
God, I would have loved to have been at that show.
That was an Ooh. Amazing time. It was a really good show. That was a show.
Wow. George, imagine that. All 45s. Mm-hmm. So would you guys just freestyle it? Like, okay, here.
No, it was very rehearsed.
Oh, it was very rehearsed. Okay, yeah, but still, that's dope. Rehearsed. Yeah.
And then we did Product Placement, which is part two, all 45s again. And then, we continued to do these mix projects. The Hard Sell, which we did at the Hollywood Bowl. And that was all 45s as well. And that's where we opened it up to loop pedals and a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily all 45s. And then we just did a tour called Renegades of Rhythm, which was using all Afrika Bambaataa's original records that he donated to the archive at Cornell University. Yeah.
The original records that he...
Yeah, so all the, you know, all his crates from back in the day from the 70s and stuff that helped
that's crazy,
start hip-hop.
Dude. That's
we
crazy.
Took him on the road, and so it was like a traveling museum performance.
Dude, do you even understand what he just said? These are just like indie, like artifact, like Indiana Jones, like him saying, here's the artifacts, totally. The original artifacts you could use.
I couldn't believe they let us take, you know,
that's insane.
All over the world. I mean, we were in like Lithuania with these things. Well, I mean, you know, after park jams in the 70s, these things weren't like in mint condition.
Yeah. So how many records would you say did you have?
Oh, man, I can't remember how many we whittled it down to, like, because again, it was a very rehearsed routine, but it was probably a couple hundred records.
Dang.
Yeah.
Is there any chance you guys could do that again soon?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, okay, so they could just type that in.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do it again. Because the records went back to Cornell, and they're, like, locked in a safe somewhere.
Wow, dude, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So I wanted to talk about your album, then we could go back. You have a new album out, don't you?
I do. Okay. I wish I brought a copy to show people.
Oh, that would have been nice, yeah?
Damn it.
So where could people, like, where could they listen to this? And
okay, so... this is my sophomore solo album. It's called Die Cut, and it is available on vinyl, CD, streaming, and iTunes, downloads. And basically, let's see, where can you get it? At bandcamp.com/cutchemist. You can get it directly from the source, and probably most places that sell vinyl. Nowadays, because, you know, it's not the...
Is that Amoeba, too, down the street?
It's definitely Amoeba. An Amoeba. Mm-hmm. And, you can search for it on iTunes. It's a lot of fun. It's very different for what I do.
Cool. How long did it take you to record the whole album?
A long time. I put a lot of pressure on myself because I wanted to do something different than I don't normally do. So I play guitar on it and do background vocals. And there's a lot of live musician collaborations.
Like who are some of the collaborations?
Tune Yards is on it.
Okay.
Biz Markie is on it.
Biz Markie's on it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what's up. Biz Markie's on it.
Mike and Nine from Freestyle Fellowship's on it.
Oh, cool.
Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 is on it.
Wow. How many songs again?
I think 15? It's like 14.
14, 15. Yeah.
And then a great, great, great drummer named D'Anthony Parks is who was Mars Volta's last drummer.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah, he's something else.
Yeah, I wish you would have brought a copy.
Shit.
Yeah. Part two.
What you could do is like put an image up while I'm talking about it.
Yeah. Can you do that, George?
You can edit that,
Chris.
In.
Can you mark that on the camera there?
Yeah. Dope.
Okay. Cool. So, and then what label put it out?
My own label, A Stable Sound.
Okay. Well, how long have you had your own label?
For about 8 years. About the same amount of time I had my SoundCloud.
Yeah. So what other artists are on your label? And
It's me. Mm-hmm. And then myself. and then another guy named I.
It's you.
Yeah. I work in the mailroom and I'm the president.
So it's just you're the only artist on it?
Yeah. And guess what? So I tried to file for a record label with the Recording Academy.
Yeah.
For a possible, you know, like you sign up so that maybe, who knows, you know, you could submit your music to the Grammys. And they're like, sorry, you don't reach the criteria because it's you don't have
enough on your roster.
Yeah, you only have one artist.
Why don't you throw a couple years with us? You mentioned.
Yeah. I'm down with that.
A couple pseudonyms.
Yeah.
Right. I should just do the Mad Lib thing and do like several other records, but under different names.
Yeah, that guy, he's amazing. Yeah. Big fan of his, too.
Yeah. Big
totally. Fan of
his. Otis. Have you collabed with MF Doom at all? Or?
I'd like to. I haven't.
That would be sick.
Yeah.
I just came up with that.
Yeah. I've been a fan of his since KMD.
Me too.
Yeah.
So why didn't Black Bastards come out? Like, it should have been bigger, man. Because,
I mean, all I could say is
the cover.
It was, cover. You know, Elektra was probably.
Yeah.
You never know what kind of red tape a big record companies pull.
Yeah.
You know.
But I remember that video, Peach Fuzz, on MTV Raps. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is a little different. It's like a little lighter.
Yeah, I think it was pulling from the same kind of De La aesthetic.
Yeah. Know? I'm so happy that you guys, you guys are still doing it mm-hmm. and stuff. Yeah. Are there any, so how are we doing on time?
Good, a little under an hour.
Under an hour?
Yeah, just a little bit. How
Okay, are there any other questions? Is there anything? Oh, we didn't talk about Ozo Motley.
Hell no, we didn't.
Like, how did you?
It's the 20-year anniversary.
Oh, really?
Of the first album.
How did you link up with Ozo Motley?
Will Dog, the bass player, put the band together, and I had known him and worked with him with Charlie Tuna. He was part of kind of a, I'm going to say like a progressive punk band.
Mm.
In LA. Mm-hmm. And so they were our rhythm section when we were dabbling with doing live band hip hop.
Oh, cool, cool.
And so that was 91. And a few years later, he hit me up. He's like, I got an idea for a new band and I want you to be in it. And it's got a tabla player and it's like rooted in Latin music, but I want to open it up to other world rhythms. And I was like, yeah, I'm down. Sounds like a crazy idea. Let's do it.
How many members?
I think there was like 10 at the time. And I brought Charlie Tuna in and then. Yeah, that's how that went.
Wow. Yeah. And how many? And then 20th anniversary, you said?
Of the first album.
Wow.
So we've been doing these re-records. Well, they've been doing the re-records, and then, you know, I'll be featured in a couple of them. Mm-hmm. Of the first album songs mm-hmm. done live in the studio. They're pretty cool. I would definitely suggest checking those out.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah. Do you do like, you know, a lot of, because you produce a lot of your own stuff. Like, do you do like freelance where, let's say someone watches this
mm-hmm.
and wants to like work with you. Like, how would they reach out to you? Or like, what are your rates and stuff? Like, let's say they wanted like just a raw thing that you do, like, and they're willing to, you know.
I get a lot of requests through DM on
Instagram,
on Facebook, actually.
Oh,
like a guy just hit me up about doing a gig, and it actually might happen.
Oh,
yeah. Like, hey, do you want to come to such and such for such and such? You know, I'm like, yeah, why not?
Yeah,
let's see if
yeah.
this works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, bypass the agent, bypass
yeah,
the manager.
Yeah, just straight to the source.
Straight to the source.
So they could do that with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's if that's the way that they're going to get in touch with me, that's fine. I mean, you can go through the proper channels and go through the agent and
mm-hmm,
whatever,
mm-hmm.
find me on Polestar or whatever. But if you want to hit me up direct, that's cool, too. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll just put
absolutely.
It out there. Yeah. So if you wanted to, you know, collab with Cut Chemist, you know, and
if you want to go out to dinner,
you could buy him a steak dinner. And if
yeah.
You, yeah.
No so, steak.
Okay, well, you yeah. know, spaghetti or something?
Yeah, something.
Okay. Okay, so I like to say
my
that.
My budget for DM dinners.
Right. I like to do that with the artists here because yeah. you never know, you know, just a lot of it's freelance now, a lot of it, like if yeah. they want to get some extra work or if they want to, you know, because a lot of producers sell their beats or something, mm-hmm. like, hey, here's a beat for 500, or here, right. I'll just give it to you, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, I'm definitely yeah. open to that. You know, mm-hmm. these days you have to find, you have to be creative about the money stream mm-hmm. and do multiple things. You can't just do one anymore. You got to do
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, let's talk about the, how's like, because since like where you're from, how has that impacted your business model today, like as far as the way you conduct your business?
Well, like I said, I work in the mailroom and I'm the president and the artist.
Yeah.
On my label.
Right.
I have an assistant mm-hmm. who actually hooked this up. And
yeah, yeah. What's his name?
Shout
again?
Out Mike Styles.
Yeah, Mike Styles. Thanks for linking us. Yeah,
from
yeah.
Beats of All Nations.
Yeah, I follow both you guys now. Yeah.
And yeah, we pretty much run things together. And we, you know, we start pretty much a way for fans to just buy from us direct, which is Bandcamp. So you can,
yeah, it's a good thing.
You Bandcamp. Can listen to the record, and yeah. then you can buy the digital or the vinyl. Mm. We ship it out.
Mm-hmm.
We fulfill. And then we also distribute through Fat Beats
mm-hmm.
and they do all the, like, you know, getting into stores and stuff. But
that's
if you want
so
to buy
cool.
online, you can
yeah.
get through us. We also have a Discogs page. So right. if you want to get some of the rarer Cut Chemist items, like I have a handful of original Brain Freezes that I chuck up there every now and then, you know,
how much are those going for?
Like I put them up for 75.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like,
do you just have digital releases too, or it's just digital?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And that's where Bandcamp comes in handy, because mm-hmm. you can do, you can buy the discography package, which is mixes.
Oh, they have
and,
that option?
And records. Yeah. So you can, you know, for a bulk price, you can get just everything that's on the page.
Oh,
that's,
I didn't know they had that.
That's a download.
Because
yeah.
I have a Bandcamp. I didn't know they offered that. You could do that?
I think so.
How yeah, many how many albums do you have on your Bandcamp? How many are you allowed to have on your Bandcamp?
I don't know if there's a limit.
There's no limit.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Don't Mike, like, is there a limit? Let us know in the comments
yeah,
section. Because
you must have a lot of albums on there by now.
Not that many. You'd be surprised. I only make one album every 12 years.
It's been a great episode. I love it. Are there any other questions you'd like to ask Cut Chemist?
Yeah, I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
What's up?
Hip-hop album that came out that really, like, inspired you to
mm-hmm.
want to work with it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
What was the most recent hip-hop album that just came out that really inspired you to want to, like, work with it?
Oh, you mean, like... Like
do something with it.
That album?
Yeah, with that album.
Live? Probably all of Uzi's stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, do you know him?
Yeah.
Yeah, Uzi.
Yeah.
His shit's dope, and I play it a lot in the club, and I just did this mix for Diplo's BBC One radio show, and there's a shit ton of Uzi on there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's good. I hit him up, and I was like, do you have anything unreleased that I can... play before it comes out, you know.
Wow, cool.
And
cool.
And he laced me with a bunch of stuff, so that was nice. You know, a lot of the trap stuff I dig just to play out, because a lot of it to me sounds like hip hop instrumentals from 86. So, you know, who doesn't like that?
Right.
You know.
You got another one? I like that. I like what you're doing. You got another one for him?
How about outside of hip hop? Same question, but not hip hop.
I think that Toon Yard's Who Kill album was a monster. It was a really dope album. You talk about loop pedal performances. Mm-hmm. Toon Yard's is killing that whole game.
Who's Toon Yard?
Toon Yard's is God. What would I describe her as? Like,
what's a female?
Well, it's a group. It's a female.
Have you heard of this, babe?
Vocalist, percussionist. And then Nate Brenner on bass,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're amazing. They've done quite well over the years. I think they've done like 4 albums.
Wow.
By now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we collaborated a little bit. But her loop pedal routines with the percussion, she'll loop percussion and stack it and loop her voice and stuff. It's pretty amazing. But I think it's like, kind of sounds world. It kind of sounds, you know, like you would probably call it alternative, just because mm-hmm. you can't put it in any box.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the types of albums I like, is when you can't really put it in any one box, you know.
Right.
Hide as Coyote is another good one.
Okay.
You know.
You know about that, babe?
Yeah, they're great.
You know about that, babe? Okay. What about? Oh yeah, that, since we're on the female, like, what? Any female artists you that you haven't worked with that you would like to work with?
Well, I'll tell you. There's this group called The Shacks, and
babe, you heard of The Shacks?
The Shacks. They're a New York based mm-hmm. kind of like, how would I describe them? Maybe like kind of pop psych. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And indie rock kind of thing. Mm-hmm. She's got a lovely voice, and they opened up for us in Dublin on this Die Cut tour mm-hmm. just a couple months ago, and they were amazing, and they're a lot of fun. They were good kids.
Oh, okay,
so
cool.
I'd like to work with them, and mm-hmm. I mean, Hydus Cody wouldn't be bad, you know. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, if you're out there watching. Mm-hmm. Let's see who else.
Oh, I have another question too.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is going back to the 90s. Top five female rappers from the 90s. Top five. Females.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to have to say Roxanne Shanté because Roxanne. The records she did on Live and Large were dope. Mm-hmm.
Roxanne.
Even though people might say that she's an 80s rapper, mm-hmm. she did dope shit in the 90s. Can I say Lady of Rage? Was she 90s?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's two. Yeah, Lady of Rage. That was 90s. Yeah.
Wait, hold on.
I know.
No. It's not hard. It's not a hard one. I'm just trying to think of like this one or that one. Shorty No Moss.
That's a Shorty No Moss.
She was like the featured guest on De La's third album.
Yeah, Balloon. Was that Balloon Mind State?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was
She
awesome.
Was dope.
Yeah.
What happened to her? How come she didn't do a record? What
Her voice.
Yeah. It was kind of like, I don't know, tough.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that song. She was, what was the name? What was the song she was on?
In the Bush?
Yeah, yeah, In the Bush, yeah.
Yeah, she
That was
dope.
A good one. You pulled that out of the, you pulled that one out of thin air.
Let's see.
Wow, that was a good one, good one.
I think Bahamadia.
Okay, yeah, yeah, for sure. Do seven, yeah, because you already have around four.
Oh, man, I was like, good. I only got one more left.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're like, give me three more.
Yeah.
Medusa?
Oh, man, we're trying to get her on here.
Medusa?
Yeah. Do two more. Because there's one or two you didn't do, and I thought you were going to do like top three. I'm like, oh, he's going to say this.
Ava DuVernay.
Which one's that? Huh?
She's you know, the director of Selma.
Okay. Okay.
And she had a group called the Figures of Speech.
Okay.
In 91, 2, or you know, 93 or whatever.
I thought you were gonna say Lauryn Hill.
I was saving her for last. Oh, okay. Why did you just blow it?
Okay. I was gonna say, oh, man, she's not seen Lauryn Hill.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah, do three more. Yeah, he could do probably a 50 more or more.
Okay, so I have to extend it to the 80s then.
Okay.
And I thought Latifah was dope. Queen Latifah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, actually,
Moni's in the middle.
Moni Love, yeah. But.
I was
going to
say,
she did
in the middle.
A
where
really
she
dope
in the
record
middle.
With her, you know, she's from the UK.
Yeah. Oh, she is? Mm-hmm. I thought she was from New York.
Mm-mm.
Oh.
And she put out a record under, I guess, is it the name? What was the name of the group? Is it Too Fresh or something? But man, her verse on that's really, really dope. And it's like 87, 88 or something.
Okay,
it's really early. But yeah, I'll put her on the list. The real Roxanne.
Mm-hmm. Who's the gal from Diggable Plant?
Oh,
Said Ladybug?
Ladybug, yeah.
Ladybug Mecca, no? Maybe top 20, huh? Definitely top 20.
No,
come
she's,
on, man.
No,
top,
she's
top
she's
20.
Definitely in there.
Yeah, she's in there. Top 20. Top 20.
You know what? What Simple E?
Okay, now you're going.
Play my funk?
Yeah, I don't.
Nah.
Okay. God, that's funny. He's really good at this stuff.
Not really. I feel like I'm brain farting all over the place.
George, is there any more questions? I know we were at an hour by now. Mm-hmm.
What's the one song you'd want people to listen to first on Die Cut? Like,
introductory song. Yeah. What song should they listen to? Yeah, Die Cut.
I think Work My Mind with Charlie Tuna is the most accessible as far as like there's the Jurassic 5 connection. And it's very danceable. Then Moonlighting with Biz is it sounds like something straight out of Biz Never Sleeps.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's really
he's
cool.
Even on, like,
yeah, we're friends.
Yeah,
you know?
That's crazy to say you're friends with Biz Markie.
Yeah, he's like, we're gonna do a song together.
Like, what's he like? I mean, I just know just, him from just, watching it, him.
Exactly on, what you think he'd be like, which is what you see on the on the YouTube.
Okay.
He's a great guy. He's, you know, a massive addict at collecting everything.
So he collects like you collect?
No. He collects not like I collect. He collects like no one else collects. He collects everything from toys, sneakers, cards, comics, movies, you name it, he does it. Flyers, you know.
Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt, but aren't we supposed to do a live feed on Instagram? Yeah, well, because I have questions that they could ask chemist here, and then I have, I'm sorry. So we're going to, and you can answer this too, as far as we have a couple questions for our Patreons. Yeah? Yeah, okay, you just do that, and then you know how to take it over, right? We're going to do a live feed. And so this is for you too. Who was the biggest crybaby? Well, I'll wait for the.
So wait a minute. Yeah. So we're actually doing this live.
We're gonna do a live we're just gonna do a live feed just for a couple minutes.
Okay.
And then before we start the live feed, can you like just refresh all where they can get your stuff and all your social media and everything?
Yeah.
So what's your Instagram?
Cut Chemist, one word. Mm-hmm. Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And on Facebook, it's Cut Chemist, two words.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, it's Cut Chemist.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And okay.
Facebook?
Facebook is Cut Chemist.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where can they get your album again?
You can get my album on bandcamp.com/cutchemist. You can also listen to and stream on mixcloud.com/ You guessed it, Cut Chemist. And
SoundCloud?
SoundCloud.com/cutchemist.
Okay.
And there's also, the Mixcloud's interesting because I do a radio show on Dublab.
You do?
Yeah. One Saturday a month. So Dublab.com from 6 to 8 on Saturdays.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we'll definitely tune into that.
The first Saturday every month. And the shows go up archived on Dublab, but they also get archived on my Mixcloud.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So if you want to hear...
Yeah,
me
dude.
Do what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. So we got all that, huh? I want to shout out. So thanks for coming, brother. I appreciate it.
Thank
we
got
to get to part two, and we're gonna have more questions.
Are they going?
Yeah, right. We're still going. I want to give a shout out to our new Patreons: Elk Plisky, James Gibson, Jeremy Kauja. We had some PayPals, so thanks. If you do want to donate to the show, we have Zahidi Guerra donate money, as well as Vintage and Hype. Thank you very much. Oh. And you could do that with our PayPal at Stevie Weeby. Is it steviewebe@gmail.com, right, George? That PayPal.
There's a link in
YouTube.
Dope. I want to do the donate.
So I have a... Bandcamp and one guy this week checked out my music. Thank you to Stone Shiowitz. Thank you, Stone. So these two questions are from our Patreons. So this is Michael Ryan's asking this. Who is the biggest crybaby diva at the World Cup? I don't know if you're a soccer fan or if you just watched.
Well, I can tell you who the biggest crybaby was when France won in 98.
Go ahead. That's interesting.
It was me because I was in France, in Paris.
Oh man!
And they shut the city down, and I felt like Snake Plissken from Escape from New York. Yeah. There was no way to get out of there, and they were throwing firecrackers on me.
Oh,
you know.
Oh man! They Is that people- when they lost?
No, they won.
Oh, France. Oh, okay.
That's what happens when they win, man.
Oh.
And man, that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life.
Okay.
Anyway.
So France did well this year, though, huh?
Yeah.
So my answer to that is Luis Suarez from Uruguay. because you know, he's always crying and stuff or biting people on the chest. Owen Allen, my boy Owen Allen, on our Patreon asks, and this is not just for you, but for everyone in here, what was the best concert or live event you guys ever seen?
I think I know mine.
Okay.
PE at the Greek Theater in 1990. Yeah, they did Fear of a Black Planet. And Ice Cube came out before America's Most came out.
Yeah.
And he did a couple songs from that album.
Yeah.
Before any of us had heard them. That was dope.
Damn.
Yeah.
George, that goes for you too. The biggest... what was the best concert you've been to?
Oh, probably Suicide Machines at the Metro in Chicago, 98 or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh. Right age for a circle pit. There was energy in the room.
Babe, did you want to get involved here too or what?
It was the show when I met you.
Aw.
That was the correct answer there. Okay, Chris?
Probably the first time my stepdad took me to see Rush live, since I grew up listening to that music.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good answer. Mine was in 1992 or 3. I'm from a small town called Poway in San Diego. And I don't know why we went to this small place called The Distillery. They're like, there's a group called The Far Kide or something. I go, mm-hmm. The Far Kide? But it was The Far Side. And I just remember seeing the stickers. There was only about 15 people in that small club. Mm-hmm. And it really blew my mind. When I saw them perform, I was like, whoa, who the hell are these guys? Mm-hmm. And I was just became a like lifelong fan ever since I saw them. And then when I ditched wrestling practice, my junior year, it was the Beastie Boys, Cypress Hill, and the Rollins Band. Mm. That was a damn good concert.
Wow.
Yeah. If you had a time machine, who would you go back and see? Cut Chemist?
Mm. Hendrix.
Oh yeah, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, it's, I'd go back in time and see that.
Oh yeah, George. If you had a time machine, who would you go back and see?
Genghis Khan. You know, he was pretty awesome. I'd check out what was happening back then.
Well, I'm sure Genghis Khan did music too.
Yeah, I'm sure he played the gongs. Okay, yeah. Okay. Sorry, all right. Okay, babe. Okay. I think they're referring to music, but go ahead, guys. They're off the.
I love that band.
Carl Jung and Genghis Khan, but yeah, he did it right. But go ahead, don't mess this one up, please. They're all right, dude. There you go.
Really?
Shout out to Frank. Okay.
Mine's
Freddie Mercury from Queen.
Okay.
Can I change
mine? Yeah. No, that's mine.
It'd be interesting to see, go back to the Mozart and Beethoven and see.
You know what? You're right. We need one classical here.
But you might find that it wasn't cracking when it came out, right?
Right.
Like it gained popularity
after. But the
time
machine, you would know, because it's a time machine. You already know these things. You could go back with that knowledge of knowing.
Like the pianos were back then. How loud, like, you know, how right. they were. Like, how could that
But I heard people like were rioting in the streets because they hated it. Because it was so, you know, different from anything they experienced before. Mm-hmm. So they were like, what is this shit?
So, man, we definitely need more DJs on here, man. And maybe you come back, do a part two?
I'll get you in touch with the Beach Junkies.
Yeah.
They come over here.
I just want one of them or two of them. I mean,
that's easy.
Babu or any Babu. Of them. Yeah.
Do you like funny people?
Yeah.
Babu's your guy.
Babe, would you like Babu? We want Babu. Okay, so I got to give a couple more shout outs.
She just lost her shit again.
I know. You've been really composed. You've been really composed the whole time.
Yeah.
We'll talk later. I don't know why you're so composed.
She's composing. Wow.
Okay. So I do. I have a Bandcamp too, stevieweebybandcamp.com. I'm working on a new project, so I'm 5 songs in. If you want to become a Patreon, join us, please. Become a patron at patreon.com/stevieweeby. Please follow.
Access
rare art. Okay, I do a picture of Money Mark. You get a drawing of this. Okay, of Money Mark. Okay, I'm going to do this of you. Okay, that's if you sign up for the 50. But then we have, you know, you get rare songs, you get art, you get you stay updated with everything Stevie Weeby Show, you know.
You can ask questions.
You can ask questions, okay. Are there some questions right there that on the feed there?
Oh, no, that's why I got distracted with the Genghis Khan answer. I was trying to read any questions.
Oh, geez, George. George, you're supposed to be on it. Jeez Louise, George. Okay.
You lost all the followers with the Genghis Khan comment.
With the Genghis Khan
George
and the
fucked
Carl,
it up for everybody.
The Carl Jung thing. Jeez Louise. Follow the show at Instagram/Kwangu, Q-U-A-N-G-O-U. Follow the two bunnies at the end of the episode at 2BUNNIEZ. And if you want to get one of these awesome handmade customized hats, babe, what's your website?
Ihaneepay.com.
How do you spell it?
ILANIFAY.com.
Do we need to do Amazon affiliates or are we doing any of that? Are we good? Are we looking for sponsors still or what's the deal? Yeah. Okay, so we're still looking for sponsors. Holler at George. How do they contact you, George?
The email's in the description.
Email's in the description. Okay. Thanks for coming, brother. Appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Man.
I can't wait to hear your album.
Oh, yeah.
It's
going to
be dope.
Go cop it.
With that being said, it's time for the Lil Ray's World. So what the hell are you? You look like a alien plant or something, man. Your name was Cheer and you used to be a lifeguard and now you're a flowering plant. Is that correct? Well, how the hell did you die and become a plant, man? Okay. I don't know what language that is, but, yeah, let me try to understand what you just told me. You try to save a man while he was drowning, and you hit yourself on the coral reef, and you died in the water, and now you're a plant. Is that correct? All right, Cheer. Me and Beep, we admire your beauty as a flowering plant, and we wrote a song about you, Cheer. It goes like this.
This one's called Cheer the False Goat's Beard, which is a flower, kid, so go ahead and look it up, okay? Cheer is a false goat's beard. What's that? A flowering plant that is here to chat. She used to be a lifeguard at the beach and tried to save the drowning man, but could not reach. His hand got pulled under the riptide. Her foot got stuck on the coral reef side. When she reached for the heavens for the countryside, the picture turned gray. Hey, soon she died. It's Cheer. Yep, the false goat's beard. She turned into a flower, man. I know it's weird. He wants to smell her, but he has no sense. Spirit rose up, now the coast is clear. The ghost of the past is the ghost of stuff. So I'll see you in 2 weeks, okay? This is Lil Ray. I love you all, man.
Join us next week for another... Oh, in 2 weeks, I'll see you back for another episode of Lil Ray's World, man.
But join us next week for the Stevie Weeby Show. And now we're releasing audio day and date, same day as the video, or at least we're trying to. Steve, yeah, as soon as Steve gets his audio intro. Okay, see you guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.